Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go Global Fast, where globalization and cultural awareness meet heart and soul. Come along and gain practical insights about how to deal with many cultures at once with sensitivity and grace. And here are the hosts of Go Global Fast, Dr. Tayera Kobayeva and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeed, here we are, and welcome to our first show. Dr. Tayera Kobayeva and I are going to be bringing you some wonderful conversation about why do we care, frankly, about globalization? What is culture? And how can we use these concepts to our greatest advantage? And I mean that in the best possible way. And I'm sure Dr. Tayera Kobayeva will agree with me about that. So I'm going to welcome my co-host, Dr. Tayera Kobayeva. Say hello.
Hello.
That was a lovely hello. And I think that just because this is our first show, I would like to have us both kind of talk a little bit about how we came to do this. In other words, we met each other at a function one time and basically had a very nice conversation about the fact that we have both lived in quite a few countries. We have an interest in how things work in terms of interpersonal relationships, and you, of course, are a cultural analyst, and just that's your life's work. And I am not. I am just a happy nomad. You know, I've lived in a lot of places, and I don't have the breadth of experience you have in terms of what you can tell our audience is your claim to fame. So, why don't you tell us about where you were educated and the kind of work that you have done internationally?
Well, before I say so, can I pitch in and say, you know, it's very interesting that you said, well, you're a cultural analyst, and I'm just a nomad. Well, I beg to differ. I actually would like to tell you that you are a cultural analyst, whether you know it or not. And we will be pulling this idea that everybody actually is to the surface by giving examples in the future. And another detail that I would like to say, maybe I'm violating the rules of the show, but I would like to tell you that the first thing we connected on, that we discovered that we lived only 45 minutes flight from each other when we were growing up. But these were 45 minutes that nobody could fly because that was the border between Ukraine, which was a part of the Soviet Union, and Turkey. But in any case, now back to me, right?
Oh, what my I'm gosh. Doing. Yes, and before you do that, and you and I are going to bounce off each other quite a bit because we're going to do this show every Monday, and we have a lot to say, and we both have opinions, and I am so glad that you did remind me, yes, I am a cultural analyst. I also consider myself a cultural attaché, so we'll just talk about how that looks, too. So I'm excited, and yes, it was during the Cold War that you and I lived so close and yet so far apart, so... yes, please tell us exactly where you went to school and your amazing results that you have had with, go ahead, tell us who you are.
Well, let me start with the fact that we were born on the opposite sides of the globe, and that's significant in its own right. I was born in Central Russia and grew up there, although ethnically I was not a Slavic Russian. In fact, partially I was. My mom was Ukrainian, and my father was Ossetian, which is a very small ethnic group on the border with Chechnya. It's right where the Caucasus is, one of the most troublesome areas in the Soviet Union and later Russia. But nevertheless, I was growing up in Russia with three languages simultaneously. Father speaks Ossetian, mother Ukrainian, growing up in Russia. Then went to school in Russia and Ukraine, and got my first education at St. Petersburg University. Later on, long story to make it short, went to Bonn University in Germany, to Bern in Switzerland, and then came to the United States, and my last education was from Tulane University here in the United States, in New Orleans, which is a culture of its own. So that's basically in a nutshell what my educational background is. And as far as my career development went, as a cultural analyst, I was basically an icebreaker. I was a political and international advisor on national security issues, primarily missile defense and space-based early warning, to the United States government. So I was preparing a lot of high-level political meetings, and that's where I noticed that culture plays a huge role. But then I noticed that it plays a role everywhere. So basically, I was a witness to globalization, and that's why the subject is of such interest to me. So
well,
that's in a nutshell. Yes,
I was just going to say, you have just used some words all strung together that, you know, back in the day would have caused some people to be a little tense. Early warning, satellites, ice, you know, the icebreaker that you're talking about, you know, and the Cold War for my purposes makes me go, oh, my goodness, you know, because my father was actually part of the embassy and did some other things that I don't talk about a whole lot in good company like yours. Not because you can't know, but because we're not supposed to talk about it, I guess, really. But my father did some amazing things, and that's why I was in Turkey in the first place. And I was between the ages of 12 and 15, and I know that what my father was doing and possibly what your father were doing were at opposite ends of a spectrum, and that makes our story very interesting, doesn't it?
And basically makes us an illustration of globalization and how everything is coming together at warp speed and what it means to all of us. So here we are, born on opposite sides of the globe, and here talking together on the territory of the United States of America. Isn't it amazing?
It is amazing. It is amazing. Now, what is globalization? You know, that's one of the words, if you Google it, you do start to get quite a few results, but do people really know what it is the way you do?
Well, I'm not sure I do, but I do have an idea because I was observing the process keenly out of necessity, just because at that very time I was changing places, countries, nations, and languages. Let's say within 1 week I could be in four or five countries, and that gave me a lot of food for thought. Globalization is a very popular word, I assume. At least that's what I see. But at the same time, I think that we have not fully grasped what the process is. So maybe I will not be able to do it as well, but I will tell you what I think. Globalization, in my view, is a very, very rapid family reunion between all of the parts of the world that before were not even a part of our thinking. They lived their life. We were distant for them. They were distant for us. We only sporadically thought about them or sometimes watched them on the news. Now we are coming together very, very quickly. And just very simple examples. Every time you land at a major airport at any country in the world, you will see McDonald's advertisement everywhere. In fact, the Golden Arches would be everywhere. But it will be a French version of it, or it could be Italian version of it, or it could be, let's say, Dubai version of it, but it will be everywhere nonetheless. Now, that is outside of the United States. But inside of the United States, you just look at the people who surround you and the types of accents they speak. That increased exponentially since the Cold War was over. And that's where the globalization started. It accelerated greatly in 1989 when Berlin Wall came down, and then the speed went even higher when the Soviet Union fell apart. And from then on, the speed is higher and higher and higher and higher. So now it has implications to all of us. If you look at American universities, you would see the number of international students. It increased. Yes, 9/11 did dampen the story a little bit, but nevertheless, it didn't stop it. It will go on quicker and quicker. So it will have ramifications for all of us, how we look for our jobs, what careers we choose, what are our careers, what is our future. What are our businesses? How are we going to live? Where our clothes come from, where our food comes from, and everything else indeed. So that's in a nutshell what I think about globalization.
Well, that's. I'd like to add one thing to that, and that is that I believe the world is shrinking. And I believe the world is shrinking in terms of the technology that makes us closer, in terms of, you know, connection and connectability, and also the fact that we can travel very quickly among countries means that it's a very small world. And we really do have a family that we are growing, and if we don't globalize, and I'm probably saying that the wrong way, but if we, you know, globalization will help us become one big happy family. Is that possible?
Not only possible, it is inevitable. That's number one. And number two, what I would like to underscore, you're absolutely correct that you say that we're shrinking. In fact, we have already shrunk. Let me give you an example, throw an example out of my own life. I thought that I will never see certain relatives ever in my life. Well, today you go to Facebook and you find them, and you find that they actually, you know, now are gray-haired. And when I saw them last time, they were just out of high school. Isn't that amazing? In fact, if you look at such social media vehicles as LinkedIn, those of us who speak different languages actually span different universes on that Facebook or LinkedIn, because we have a Russian universe, and then we have a Turkish universe and an Italian universe and a French universe, and all of them exist within that one format. So it has already shrunk. You're absolutely correct, and the process continues.
What I also know is that the culture that we're going to talk about is not just Russian culture versus Turkish culture versus American culture. It's also culture within the United States, as an example. For example, my family is from the South, the Deep South, and the culture of the Deep South is very different from a place where I lived for 15 years, which is California, or either coast. You know, it's completely different. So I think for our purposes on this show, talking about culture and how do we exploit in a good way how our cultural understanding you know, works in a relationship or works in a business. And it's just an amazing concept, really.
You are absolutely correct. And that's exactly what we would love to explore. We would love to see what's in it for us practically. Because we can study a lot of things. We can get to know a lot of things. But we have necessities of life today. How do we become successful today? What will make our life better? And so I think in this show we will try to show how it can be done. But going back to your observations about you living in the Deep South and then going to California and that being a different culture, I noticed exactly the same thing. And you know what's funny? The moment I crossed the pond, and that means Atlantic Ocean, means Atlantic Ocean and sometimes means Pacific Ocean, the distinction immediately disappeared. Everybody thinks that you are representing the United States of America. And I'm always surprised because I say, but what America? Which America? And they say, what do you mean, which America? America is all the same. I say, no, you are very much mistaken. So Americans themselves sometimes forget that they themselves have history and culture, and they are very different from each other. And they are, from this standpoint, a very unique nation. And I would like to show my very first impressions of America. I remember my first 5 minutes in JFK Airport in New York when I first landed in the United States, and I remember I needed to run and catch another plane, and I couldn't do so. The reason being is I was in deep shock because I was looking around at the faces of the people, and they were so different from the people, the race features, the race mix that I saw there, from what I was used to see in the old world, in Europe, that I couldn't catch my breath. And I looked at all people surrounding me, and I thought, do Americans know how beautiful they are? They're incredibly good looking. And look at these skin colors. They span everything from coffee and milk, from milk to coffee and milk, from coffee without milk, and going even darker than that. And I thought, oh, this is amazing. I have never seen anything like that. And then, of course, I had to wake up and run and so I could catch the plane. But that was my first impression. And even at that moment, I understood that it was the new world. And the new world has a fundamentally different race mix than the world I was used to, the world that was created earlier, the world of Europe. And it was a fascinating experience. And at that moment, I understood that America is a very different entity. Now, when I started living in America, I understood it and noticed it even more. For example, I would take American delegations across the Atlantic, and we would land in Europe, And I would see the difference between Bostonians and Californians, and I very quickly understood that there was a back east culture, as we call it in the Wild West, and then there is the West Coast culture of California. So it was very, very interesting to observe, and then I also understood that it affects how America acts in the world, but people outside of the United States don't know it about America, and so I had a chance to explain it. But in the meantime, I noticed that it plays a role inside of the United States, and it needs to be understood. For example, I noticed that when people date and they are from different family backgrounds, that that family background plays a huge role on how their family relationship gels. And they do not know that it plays that much of a role. But I, as a cultural analyst, was able to see it and was able to explain it to them. More than that, I noticed how their career development goes depending upon what culture they come from. So, anyways, yes, America is a multicultural country, not multiracial only, but multicultural as well.
I am stuck on something that you said that's awesome, because you mentioned first impression. And literally, standing in JFK, first impression, sort of like when I went to Turkey for the first time, or I've actually lived in Iran, so I have impressions of that. And the first impression is very important. But what about people that have never come here and their only impression is something that they have picked up in books and television? For example, if they are watching our TV shows right now that are the most prevalent ones that are very popular abroad, you know, what do they think of us? You know, what are they seeing, and are they assuming that that's the way we all are? That's one question I want to come to. And the other one, and we don't necessarily have to talk about it today, but your homework for next time, if you haven't already watched an episode of Mad Men on Sunday nights, I want you to do that, and I want everybody to watch at least one episode of Mad Men, because that is a cultural and sociological expose on America in the 1960s, and it is eye-opening for people that weren't from here. So what do you think about that? Do you think that people are, in fact, making their only impression from things they see on TV and movies?
Well, let me answer this question in the following fashion. First of all, to thank you that you asked that question, because it's such a valuable question. Here's why. I hear all the time when I'm in the United States, tell us, what does the world think about us? It's almost a common phrase. I know we're hated, so I do not travel. Or Americans are not liked. Why is it? And I said, where would you get that? Actually, you're partially correct, but for all the wrong reasons. And here's what I would like to say. America has a very interesting image from looking at it from the outside. And I actually get under that spell myself, because I remember very well, let me just give you an example of how it first dawned on me. I would accompany an American delegation. We would fly, let's say, to Zurich, Switzerland. And the moment we deplane, on the plane, they were my buddies. You know, we mow the lawns, and so we are exchanging all kinds of pertinent information of which lawnmower to buy or something of that nature. Then we land in Zurich. I look at them, and I suddenly think, who are these Americans? And immediately I saw how I went under the hypnotic thinking of being a European looking at Americans. And I thought, wait, but this is my buddy John. We were just discussing lawnmowers with him. And so I noticed that I myself go into that stereotypical thinking of not understanding Americans, in spite of the fact that I am an American myself. So here's how America looks from the outside. It is an overwhelmingly strong presence in the world for a variety of reasons. The major one of them is the cultural reason, is because entertainment, information products, information tools such as iPhone, let's say, or Macintosh computer, or some other popular gadgets, are coming out from the United States. Now, the problem is that United States has a very, very good job to never show to the rest of the world. What is the best about America? In her entertainment shows. But what it does, it shows what is the worst about America. And we discussed it before, so I would like to give an example. There is MTV channel in the United States, and then there is MTV channel at every hotel you ever stay outside of the United States. All major hotels will have MTV channels. The problem is that MTV channels there are different from MTV channel inside of the United States because they show things that are prohibited to show inside of the United States. So if you watch an MTV show outside of the United States, you sometimes are left with the impression that it is, as Reagan called the Soviet Union, is an empire of evil. These are absolutely, I don't even know how to call these shows because my eyes are literally popping out of my eye sockets. This is not America I know or respect or love or accept. Therefore, people are very often left with a very wrong impression of America. And so they immediately start thinking about Americans that way when they meet real people. And then there is no time for Americans to actually explain that their personal lives, their personal endeavors are not understood by these people who are so much influenced by mass media products coming out of the United States. So it does affect profoundly how America is treated or viewed in the world. In fact, I very often see foreign students coming into the United States and me being a professor teaching them, and it will be like oil and water in a classroom. They don't mix. They sit in one corner of the classroom, and Americans sit in another corner of the classroom, and they are supposedly together, and yet they cannot be more different or more separate than they are if they were to be on two different sides of the ocean. And it surprises me very, very much because it leaves misunderstanding between us. So it is very relevant for us to understand how America is looked at in the world. And, yes, there are challenges that are very serious. There is very schizophrenic view of America outside of the United States. So do we do a good job of ruining our image? Yes, we do. Does it affect our lives? Yes, it does. Does it affect our international businesses? Yes, it does. Do we need to correct it? Yes, it's highly desirable. How do we do it? Through personal connection and through going global ourselves and, by the way, becoming successful at it through the right means. So the beauty of America is not visible. I hope I'm not lecturing too much, am I? Is that okay?
Well, oh, it is, and I'm taking notes, so clearly it's working for me.
Let's hope it works for somebody else, too.
And it will. Now, here's the thing that I was kind of writing down is that what you're kind of intimating is that the entertainment sometimes that we export, so to speak, shows the ugly side or the dark side or those evil qualities. And when are we exporting the opposite of that? You know, what is the vehicle for exporting the good stuff? And my first thought is how we are in terms of, for example, during a natural disaster, Americans are right there. You know, we show up, we pack up a bag, we go and, you know, help dig people out of fallen buildings. I mean, that's just the way we are. So do people not understand, or is it just that they're watching HBO or something like that? That's one question. Another question is when we have movies like The Hunger Games, which just came out this past weekend, which is, of course, about teenagers fighting to the death, and this movie makes kabillions of dollars in its release, you know, the first weekend. You know, what does that say about our culture? What are we doing? What do you think?
Let me show you. Let me start answering in sequence. The first question, do people know the other side of America? I can sadly tell you, to the best of my knowledge, no, they don't, and no, they don't understand. Then what is the vehicle?
That's a problem.
We have a huge problem. We have a huge problem of how we define ourselves, how we're viewed in the world. Now, we can do something about it, and we should do something about it. And I will tell you what I think should be done about that. But let's go to that very first question. What is, how is America viewed? I'm telling you, it will not be a secret that schizophrenically. On the one hand, the products, the entertainment products, tell you very, 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 very negative things. In fact, I'm very firmly convinced, and I'll put it on the line, that the nature of terrorism actually comes from that. That's why terrorism is such a lingering idea, and it can recruit people, because it's easy to recruit people against the United States and say, do you see what a moral presence they are? Do you see what they do? Do you see what they consider acceptable? That is where the problem is. That's number one. Number two, what do we do about it? And when I started working as a bridge between the United States and the world, I continuously was thinking about that subject, and I came to the conclusion that the best thing to do is actually for people now to bypass, let's say, the mainstream channels, but start communicating, building business between people, between United States, people in the United States of America, and people outside of the United States of America. Now, that's where the best of America comes from. If I were to define America as a culture, the whole America, when we're not talking about, let's say, local cultures, but we are talking about the national culture, because if you go into the cultural analysis, you would say there is national culture and there are lower expressions of culture, more localized. I can tell you, nationally, United States of America is the country that relentlessly pursues self-development. Now, people viscerally know it about United States of America. That is one of the channels where America shines. Let me give you an example. I have a game that I play with myself. Whatever country I land in, I go to the bookstore because I study cultures, observing people in bookstores and restaurants and other places. And if we ever get to the point that I explain how we study cultures, I actually will give you some tips as to how we go about that. But I go to the bookstore, and I specifically go to different sections, and I study which books people read, what books people buy, and what books are popular. The business section is always the section that is very crowded, and a lot of people buy business self-help books. They are almost 100%, if not 100%, translations of American authors. You could see who is the leader in that area. And American thought processes, American efforts in developing themselves are extremely popular in the world. That is the reason American education is considered the most coveted education in the world today. Other institutions pattern American education, and American education is the most successful product next to iPhone and other gadgets that we already discussed. And why is that? That is because America is considered to be the leader in that area. In fact, in Britain, there is a very popular joke that I heard many times. If you want the project to happen, hire an American manager. Don't I agree with that statement? I agree wholeheartedly. That was, in my view, that is 100% true. I myself observed that trait of Americans in joint international projects. If something seems impossible, these people have a knack of doing it. They will do it. They will find a way to do it, and they have a particular mindset that allows them to do it. That particular mindset, the whole world tries to decipher, and therein lies a major strength of an American that an American needs to understand, recognize, and use it to his own advantage inside of his own country and outside of his own country. And I would say that's where the heroism and linchpin of America, of America's nobility lies in, of American greatness lies in. That's what I would like to say. But do they know that Americans are generous? No, they don't. And the reason being is because entertainment products unfortunately show how calculating Americans are and why they do certain things. Like, for example, they are too pragmatic. They are always chasing money. They have dollar signs in their eyes. There's also very, very popular jokes or statements, stereotypes about America outside of the United States of America, influenced by entertainment products. Now, there is one feature of America that also influences the world. And at the same time, I think it's very healthy for Americans to learn that there are other ways of life in other cultures. For example, teenage rebellion is considered to be almost a necessity. Am I speaking too much? I mean, listen, maybe I just should give you some space. Should I?
No, go ahead.
Should I just continue?
Yeah, finish that thought, and then I'll come back and wrap around on some of the things that I want to touch on. That's fine. Go for it.
So, but let me then explain what I was trying to say. Teenage rebellion is a phenomenon that is considered to be an absolutely necessary rite of passage for an American. Now, we people from other cultures did not know that such phenomenon even existed. Now, the moment that phenomenon got exported to other countries, it created such havoc. And now, poor parents actually hate America because they say, oh, look at them. I mean, they have these crazy ways that they allow teenagers to behave in. And others are actually very successfully, teenagers very successfully, you know, following it or imitating it, and it creates havoc in other cultures. And other cultures are not at all, let's say, well-adjusted, that they can even tolerate that kind of teenage rebellion. It's just not a part of the cultural continuum, but now it's being expressed there. And so what I'm saying is we people from other cultures silently actually live and build our families differently inside of the United States of America. And that's where the value of cultural knowledge comes in, because Americans themselves need to review continuously what's working in their culture and what's not working in their culture. And if something is not working, better learn from somebody else, and we will show you how it can be done, and so that you could use it to your advantage. And there are many things that I would like to share with you and share with those who take time to listen, as to what these things are and how these things are and how these cultural things sometimes are not even working for the United States of America. So do I think it's a problem? Yes, I do think it's a problem. And a big one, it makes life almost unbearable for poor parents, for a teenager who goes through a very severe stage of rebellion. And somehow a teenager thinks it's okay.
Right. Well, I can also tell you that in Arizona here not that long ago, there was a teenage girl, I believe they were from Iraq originally, and she did something, you know, very minor for what we would consider very minor. I believe it had something to do with boys or whatever, and her mother beat her in a way that, you know, was pretty significant. And this woman was arrested, and then this teenage girl has to explain on camera, because she was being interviewed, that her mother could not be arrested for such a thing, that she had done something wrong, and that her mother had a right to beat her. And, you know, so it was completely coming from that cultural situation, just exactly what you're talking about. You know, she had what we would consider a normal rite of passage kind of rebellion, and her mother beat the tar out of her, you know, and it was because of what her culture says. So now you've got that to deal with, because we've got all these things that are blending together.
And can I say something? You are absolutely correct, and the example is right on. And let me even add to that a little bit more and say the following. Of course, you know, that is not beating kids is not the best way, although in other countries it is an accepted practice still. But America, by its cultural influence, actually is a very powerful presence, teaching others that it's not a good idea, and that's a positive part of the United States. But let's look at an American phenomenon that is exported now abroad in massive quantities, and that phenomenon is called proms. Now, when I came to the United States, I was absolutely shocked by how many cultural references exist to this mysterious event that is called a high school prom. I just couldn't understand what was going on. What were people talking about? And I'm very hesitant to even use these cultural associations because, you know, they pertain to sex and they pertain to other things that I would consider inappropriate in a discussion. But I can tell you, if you look at this phenomenon, look what happens. A prom, by nature, in my view, is a very unfair event for a girl because she needs to be asked out. And it's very unfair for a boy because he has to pay. What if he cannot pay? And what if she cannot be asked out? But then again, her place in society goes down very low because she was not invited. At least that was my observation. I could be wrong. But what I thought, instead of being very happy about proms, my first reaction was, what a cruel event. I mean, is it necessary to put people under such pressure? I do understand that because you need to buy a dress, and a dress costs money. And by the way, when I first came to the United States, a dress cost an average monthly salary of a Russian. And it did change, but nevertheless, it's a significant amount of money. At least that's how it came across to me. And then these are very expensive events. And I thought, well, what a strange, strange thing. Don't you think it would be much better not to have them and have something else, something different? And again, therein lies the value of globalization, because we here in the United States, we in ever-increasing quantities, because immigration to the United States did not go down, it actually went up, we are here. We are a part of America. We are Americans who are of Iranian descent, Armenian descent, Georgian descent, German descent in well, let's say many, many, many other countries open. You can see waves of immigration coming. And we are changing the face of America as we speak. So please get acquainted with us. Please get to know us. And maybe some of what we do, we can teach you. But we will certainly learn from you. And then we become conduits of direct cultural influence, bypassing entertainment and media and political channels. So I hope it makes sense. And you are
it does.
Correct.
It does.
And that's, you go ahead, yes.
Okay, so what I'm going to say now about prom, as an example, it not only is disturbing that it got exported abroad, and that maybe people are trying to figure out how to have proms in other countries where they're like, oh, my gosh, you know, why do we have to do this?
They do.
It is a cruel event.
Mm-hmm.
It is a cruel event, but imagine this. Imagine from an intergenerational cultural experience. In other words, when I went to school 1,000 years ago, there was a senior prom. That was the prom that I went to. It was only one. Now, these kids are having their 8th grade prom. They're having their junior prom. They're having their senior prom. They get into a limousine for their 8th grade prom. And I said, back in the day when my husband's daughter was having her 8th grade or 7th grade or whatever it was event, I said, well, we're taking away, when we let her get into a limo like that, we're taking away from the most important time when she's going to get into a limousine, which is probably on her wedding day. Or, you know, see what I'm saying? And so now I've got a cultural observation from one generation to the next, you know, or one experience to the next. See what I'm saying? So there's also that piece that we can explore.
Absolutely. And I would like to add to that. But therein lies the value of that very phenomenon that is called globalization. Because we cannot just sit, and we won't. We won't be able to sit within the framework of one culture without analyzing who else is living on the next block here in the United States. And again, I think it is highly, highly advisable for us to become open to how they do things, because we can learn a lot. And let me touch on another cultural trait that I think needs to be analyzed. Many, many things in the United States are a product of one cultural dimension that is called individualism. Individualism brings wonderful results, and it also brings disastrous results. In other words, there are expressions of individualism that are very, very, very healthy, and that is why America became a leader on self-development, because individualism says you are responsible for what you are. It is not the society that molds you. You are. You are responsible for your happiness and for your future. This is a tremendously appealing idea to the rest of the world, and the rest of the world actually loves to follow because they feel that it is a very, very constructive thing. On the other hand, the worst expression of that cultural trait in the United States leads to a disease which I would say consumed the United States, and that is rampant loneliness, rampant sense of separation that we, people from collectivist cultures, have to a much lesser degree. We are healthy emotionally because we do not feel that we are all in it alone. We feel that we can rely on others more. And so, the beauty and the linchpin of globalization and cultures mixing with each other and the world family coming together, and that we are learning from each other. And America is in a very strong position, but at the same time has yet a lot to learn from others as well. And America always did it beautifully. You just need to go to restaurants in the United States. There is an Italian restaurant. Obviously, they learn how to eat Italian food. And then there is a Chinese restaurant. Obviously, Americans learn how to eat Chinese. Boy, now we need to learn how to think Chinese, how to memorize Chinese, how to dress Italian, how to relate to life as a Greek, and off, on and on and on we go. That is globalization. That is what's in it for us.
And what occurs to me is that what you're saying right there is the opposite of when you say how they do things in a way that marginalizes or otherizes a group of people or a person. In other words, to talk about it in terms of a world family coming together and taking the best and understanding the worst, basically, of each culture and group and so forth and all the dynamics, when you put it all together as a world family, that's great. But do you see what I'm saying about when you talk about or when people talk about how mm-hmm. they do things? It's very marginalizing. It can be if you're not open to what we're talking about.
Exactly. In other words, the world, even today, still thinks us and them.
Yes.
All of us, every culture, every country still does it. This separation that exists in the minds of the people, us versus them. And that is one of the challenges for which globalization has been created, in my view, is because this distinction has to disappear. And it is disappearing. And again, we're mutually inter-influencing each other. And let me throw another idea where America is an incredible presence in the world because it expresses through herself the best universal principles. And by the way, let me even say something else about cultures. Cultures always are like coins. They always have two sides. The bright side, where universal principles of goodness are expressed, and the shadow side, that is the worst part of that expression, and like individualism, as I described it before. And here is where America also shines. Because of American individualism and because of American understanding of personal responsibility for your own destiny, it created the phenomenon of respect to the human personality, no matter who you are or where you are. That principle is carried through an American automatically, whether an American understands it consciously or not. An American, by virtue of being born in America, carries that principle inside of him or her. I've seen it many, many, many times that an American influences the world without even knowing that he or she influences the world by carrying that principle inside of him or her. And it creates staggering results with staggering, wonderful outcomes for all involved. You see? And at the same time, some of us who come in the United States, we carry other principles in our blood, in our DNA, in our cultural DNA. And so this us and them is disappearing through the process of globalization. You are absolutely correct. And it's happening. Look at you and I. We're sitting 45-minute flight, two girls, teenage girls, being separated by 45 minutes of a very, very narrow strip of the Black Sea. And at the same time, there were eons, light years. We never thought we would see each other, ever. We were destined to be separate, and we're not.
Exactly, exactly. Now, did you say that it was our respect for the human personality that is that big principle? I didn't catch the word. I want to make sure
yes.
that I have it.
Yes. Universal implicit understanding that America carries through her psyche of fundamental respect to any human personality, to a human, like human rights, like that respect. An American would never even notice how it's expressed. It's expressed in the formulas of speech. It's expressed in how you relate to each other. For example, let me give you an example. I remember very well how I was how I was helping somebody who did not speak English to fill out an order to be, well, it was actually in Turkey, to send to order something from an American website. And when you fill out the information about yourself, it says, what is your title, like Mr., Mrs., Ms., Reverend, and such like. And there is a whole list that pops up, a menu with a whole list of possible addressings. And I remember very well that a person did not know what to do with that. And I said, well, if it's a woman, you need to decide whether it's a Mrs. or a Ms. And she couldn't quite understand what I was referring to. And I said, well, so why are you a Mrs. or a Ms.? She said, well, you tell me. I said, well, I cannot tell you because you need to decide for yourself. It was an incomprehensible principle that you have the right to decide how you present yourself to the world. And they give you a choice, and the choice is yours. And you have the freedom to decide, and they respect your choice, and they will observe it. It was incomprehensible for that person. I remember she was staring at the computer for half an hour, and I was laughing. I was thinking, oh, that is an American principle. Many choices, but also that very principle I'm talking about, the equal respect to any human personality and giving them the right to define themselves and giving them the freedom to define themselves. Japan, with all my due respect, is a different culture. It defines a person differently. And I can bet you my very strong guess is that personal choice is how you define yourself is much, much narrower. But then Japanese do other things extremely well, and we borrowed them, and we will borrowing things from all over the world ourselves, and that's how we will be successful in the 21st century. We Americans here inside of the United States.
Right. Well, I know that you founded Go Global Fast as a result of realizing that there's some missing links, you know, things that are not fully explained, not fully blossoming, if you will, so that we as Americans understand all of the good things that you're talking about and really take those in and take those on. In other words, I think sometimes as an American you just take for granted so much. You maybe cry over spilled milk, you know, the economy's not this, and you got all these stories in your mind and, you know, everything is bad, and it's really not, you know, it's really not. And so there's a missing link in how this global family is going to be created, and you decided that Go Global Fast was the answer, correct?
Yes, I did. And can I even illustrate one of the examples that show where the issue, the challenge lies for us at the moment? And I will go just a little bit into theory and hopefully not bore everybody out of their mind. Enculturation happens very, very early in the human life. It actually coincides with starting speaking a language. So by the age of two, that's it. Enculturation is already underway, full speed. As a result, it sits so deeply in you, that software sits so deeply in you, that you actually do not really, really true. You think you know, but no, you do not know you have it, and you do not know your emotional reactions attached to your cultural reactions. They are immediate. They bypass rational brain. They go straight to emotions. So almost 70% of all international endeavors today fail precisely for that reason. And the reason being is that cultural reactions are so quick, cultural modes of operation are so deep that you would never figure out what exactly killed you, because you don't know you have it inside of you. You just know that you're mad, but you don't know why. And therefore, but then, of course, the interest to start something abroad is becoming larger and larger. The desire to travel, the desire to get to know people, the desire to see how they live their lives is increasing. It has increased and is increasing still and will continue to increase. The flood of people coming from outside into the United States is also increasing. So the necessity for us to understand each other is very, very high. And let me give you even a local example of how it looks inside of the United States. When you go to the South, it strikingly at first reminds you of a very, very official European way of relating to each other. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I got the concept of a Southern lady immediately. But at the same time, the difficulty was that those polite formulas were so deep that I could never understand what people really thought. I had to learn all these formulas and then try to observe even one layer deeper so I could figure out what opinion people had. And I thought, it's all wonderful. The formulas are wonderful. I love it, but darn it, I cannot get my job done. So please, please, just please tell me what is really happening. And so you see how cultural mode of operation is so deeply ingrained and how much it is a part of that person's psyche. So you cannot get what you need professionally out of them. And it sometimes affects the situation in general. Now multiply it, let's say, by 25, 50, 100%, 100 times, and you will get what happens when you become an international entrepreneur or when you put together initiatives. And we will put together initiatives because that's where Americans shine. That's what Americans will always keep doing. They will always break the boundaries and expand the horizons of the world. So now we need to learn how to do it, and hopefully Go Global Fast will help us to do it.
I do think it will, and one thing I caught, another thing I want to say, and you and I will go back and forth, not correcting one another or reframing one another's thought processes, because I know that that's a temptation sometimes when you you see something, you go, I don't look at it that way. So you and I know how to do this with each other. So what I'm going to say is this. You just used the word formulas, and I'm going to suggest that using a formula or dealing with people in the South, as an example, could almost be the same thing as succumbing to prejudice and bias if you weren't careful. I don't mean you, but I'm saying people. See what I'm saying? So formulas could equal prejudice and bias. That's how interesting this whole thing is to unwrap and unpack and see how does it all work.
And can I add to that? I think you're so right about formulas. There is such a fine line between a fundamental respect and acceptance of other people's ways and understanding and also stereotyping. I mean,
yes.
As opposed to stereotyping them.
Yes.
Because you can easily stereotype. And stereotypes actually are considered to be the very first tool in cultural analysis. And they do play their role as long as there is no negative judgment attached to them. But negative judgment, as I previously stated, or emotional judgment, actually a very strong part of cultural, let's say, of getting to know culture, because emotions are built into your way of seeing the world. It rubs you the wrong way if something is not what you're used to. And continuously and consciously, negative judgment needs to be disattached from our desire to understand others. And that's a whole process, and it needs to be spelled out. How do you get to know other people? How do you get to know other cultures or other relationships or other nations without that very negative emotional judgment attached to it that pops up immediately and the desire to exercise it and feel it is very strong?
Well, I think that should be maybe the topic for our next show, which is next Monday, and basically just talk about how do you, in fact, get to know others and how can you use your culture to your benefit, understanding that it's just part of the dance. Does that sound like a good thing to work on?
I think it's a wonderful thing to work on. Yes, it is a dance of life, and how to become successful in that dance of life, and how to live your life the best way you can under the conditions that are so rapidly changing, when life is becoming so overwhelmingly, I would even say overwhelming with information, with the amount of knowledge that is skyrockets. I don't even know what to do with this process myself, and looking for innovative ways continuously. And cultural analysis helps greatly in that. And globalization is the process to take advantage of, not to be fearing. And so that's what we will be trying to discuss, right? How not to fear.
Exactly. How not to fear. Exactly. Because having lived abroad myself, and I was born in the Philippines, so when I came across the ocean on whatever ship it was as a baby, we hit the United States for the first time, and I saw people that I had never seen before, and I was very confused, needless to say. I'm talking about we went to the South, and I saw the first black person I ever saw, you know, and I apparently said something about that to my parents, and they were horrified that I would, you know, bring it up. But my point is, it is all just, you know, the one big family of man, one big family of woman, and you come in and you come out of other people's lives, and you sometimes say the wrong thing or you do the wrong thing. But if you have a good heart about it, and we've talked about this show and your work being about the heart and soul of globalization, and really, you know, the fact that you and I are talking about the family of man, you know, the family of the world, I love that. I really do. I am very happy that we are framing it in that way, and I really appreciate all that we have talked about today. It's been far-ranging. You know, we will. I'm going to listen to it again. I've taken 6 pages of notes, for goodness sake, and I'm, you know, trying to stay up with you and some of it, and it's like, oh, my gosh, this is so good. So I hope others have enjoyed it as much as I did.
Well, let's see, Debbie, and hopefully people will help us as well. You know what would be wonderful? If people were to send us questions and ask us, well, tell us about this, tell us about that, tell us about this. And we would love to do that. And let's explore it, right? If we can actually learn what other people are interested in, how we can help them, how can we help them to become successful? And
right.
Globalization does help tremendously, in my view. But that's my opinion. But I would love to actually put it on the table.
Well, I know that your website is goglobalfast.com. I also know that it is a work in progress, that the website is certainly there, but it has, I know that it is going to morph into an amazing place to find all kinds of information and ways to interact and engage about globalization and culture. So I think if people just send an email to you, would that be okay, at tk@goglobalfast.com? Is that okay?
Sure, yes.
Okay.
tk@goglobalfast.com. People, send your questions, please, because that will allow me, you know, I'm like a working dog, like to serve my masters. Whatever masters say, I do. So I will try to then figure it out, and then Debbie will correct me where I'm wrong, and off we go.
Absolutely. Well, it has been a pleasure, and I'm done. I'm done for the day because my mind is absolutely flying. I have no more questions. So you and I will have to sign off and just go and think and just know that we're doing the right thing because we have information that other people can use for their own success, don't you think?
I would love to think that way, but having my old world negative mentality still stops me. I want to become a positive American. By the way, it's the best trait of America, but we will discuss it next time.
Yes, we will. All right, so that's it for the day, and thank you very much, everyone, for joining us on our first Go Global Fast, and we will see you next week.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, and please have a good day.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Go Global Fast with Dr. Tayera Kobayeva and Deborah Brown. Tune in every Monday for another hour of globalization success strategies. Go Global Fast is a production of the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.